Design Pickle is a big supporter of everything Unseminary. If you haven't heard, they are a flat rate, unlimited use graphic design service helping churches across the nation. We're a proud client of theirs and love how they help us make social media graphics and those downloadable PDF article summaries that we've been sending out. Even if you have a designer, you need to check them out. To learn more, visit designpickle.com/churches. On that same page, you can watch a totally free 30-minute video of me and the founder of Design Pickle talking about modern church marketing. And of course, pickles.
Ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name's Rich, the host around these parts. And we have got, I think, the third time guest, which I think there's only one other person who's ever had three times on the Unseminary Podcast. Frank Beeler, welcome back.
What? Three times trifecta. This is absolutely incredible. Such a privilege to be here. And Rich, we haven't got a chance to talk like this. We've just been running so hard. So I'm excited just to, I know everybody else is listening in, but just to catch up.
That's true. I know. I'm excited to hear. I love, you know, you've switched from when we last talked, you were at Elevation Church. Fantastic church. Obviously, a lot of people would know Elevation. You've switched and are now over at Rethink or the Orange Group. So why don't you tell us about what you're doing over there? Tell us about that role.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, my time at Elevation was absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. Hardest decision of our life was making this transition, you know, 7-8 months ago now. Mm-hmm. I'm the executive director of leadership development, and I don't know that means a lot. Sounds fancy. Sounds really important. Like, I feel like I should be wearing a tie now,
exactly.
You know, in this session. Executive director of leadership simply means I get to sit on the executive team and help us make decisions that move the overall organization forward. Mm-hmm. But then the leadership development means I get to oversee the resources, books, podcasts, initiatives that help coaching, that kind of stuff that helps staff, specifically at churches, just do their job better, just raise the bar in overall leadership, equipping them with the tools and resources. A lot of times we give them the strategy and great concepts and great curriculum, but how they navigate that with their senior leaders or how they implement that with volunteers is a real uphill battle sometimes. So we want to make sure we're equipping them with that as well.
Mm-hmm. And then you're also connected with these FAZE family centers, right? That's a piece of the puzzle there. Can you tell us about that? Yeah, let's talk about what that is.
Yeah, so I'm going to be slightly cryptic, but I'll give you some, and then we'll go from there, okay?
Okay, great.
It'll be our fourth podcast together, because I really think it's a game changer.
Okay, great.
Here's what we're trying to solve. A group of us have gotten together. I'm the CEO of FAZE Family Center. We're trying to meet two needs, trying to solve the tension of millennials engaging with church less, significantly less, and giving going down. And so basically what we've done is we've created a for-profit organization that's going to build a building, and run a very large preschool and after school program in that, which is going to subsidize the cost of the facility very strategically, along with event rentals and space. So we're basically building a big church, 700-seat auditorium on the side of it, that the church will per se rent one day a week. And then, of course, they can do events. During the rest of the week, it's going to be highly utilized, and we're building it from the perspective of the millennial family that's not interested in faith at all. So it's not a faith-based preschool or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And the facility is built for high exposure, high rent, high engagement for events. It's a place you do weddings, unlike a lot of our churches these days where you don't do a wedding there because it's not fancy. There's no natural light.
Yes.
We're actually going to put windows in our auditorium and, you know, and that's going to be a mess from a production on a Sunday morning. But
no lights and
that's
smoke.
Also going to create, you know, hopefully our auditorium looks more like something that like would be at Anthropology or something like that, where there's great photos and carriage doors for pictures, things like that. And we are right now 1 week away from signing the lease on our first project, which will be $17 million. All capital's raised. It's a big project. We're really excited about it.
That's cool. Yeah, we'll have to have you back on that. I've heard a little bit about that, and it's kind of, it sounds intriguing, you know, for sure. Now, you know, obviously, what have you found as you've switched from being kind of in a local church to, you know, kind of working with church leaders across the country? Obviously, you did that when you were at Elevation, a part of what I loved about your, you know, you're just so generous with your time, you know, when you were there. But what have been some of the pressures that you've seen that have just come up time and time again with church leaders as you've, you know, been interacting with them?
Yeah, I'm finding that most ministry leaders, their circumstances, their tensions are the same. It doesn't matter the size of the church. Part of it's because we're never finished.
Right.
Doesn't matter if you're a church of 100 or 5,000, like it's relentless.
Yeah.
Our mutual friend Carrie Newhoff told me, I guess it was maybe a summer or two ago. I just finished mowing my grass and we were catching up, talking through some things. And he said, "You know why you like mowing your grass, don't you?" And I said, well, tell me why." He said, "Because it's the only thing in your life that actually finishes, right?
Right.
Everything just is perpetual. And you get to turn around and look and say, look what we've done. And there's no follow up.
Right.
There's no strategy. It's
right.
finished." And I'm just seeing that because there's urgency with the gospel and we want to do the best we can and reach as many people and care for as many people as we can, the role of ministry is really relentless.
Mm-hmm.
And I find people, especially as we've been going on Orange Tour and kind of getting out, we just continue to find people that are at a near place of brokenness and people that are past that place.
Right.
And it doesn't matter, once again, size of church or circumstance, but there's a real challenge that we're facing in the church as far as caring for the staff and key volunteers and setting them up for success. Because I think the pressure, Rich, is, well, everybody else is doing just fine, so why can't you get it together and do it? And I think that's the mindset of most ministry leaders.
Right.
And while it's like, no, I'm actually struggling just like you are, we're trying to figure it out together.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. You know, I know I had a friend of mine, he used to joke, he said, you know, ministry is a bit of a black hole. It's just never done, right? You come to the end of the week and whatever that is, I'm not sure what the end of the week is. You come to the end of the week and there's still like, there's still hurting people. There's still lost people. There's still broken people. There's no end to it. And you said something too that I thought was interesting. Which I've thought about in the past, that, you know, I've worked with church leaders really across the spectrum, from you know a smaller church or even a church plant up to, you know, some of the kind of largest churches in the country. And it's interesting, people across that spectrum are running at about the same pace. You know, that they're, it seems like it takes the same, it's not like if you're a church of 100 people or of 75 people, it's not like it's less, you know, output as someone who's at a church of, you know, 15,000. And then the converse is true actually too, that actually a church of 15,000, those people are running the same, you know, as a church that's, you know, that's smaller. There's a real overwhelm that, you know, that we put on ourselves. And I think the complexity too of how do we do this and still be healthy is, you know, is important for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. I have a good friend, Rich, who, I think you know him, you know, Bobby Williams,
oh,
don't
absolutely.
You?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Bobby's amazing. Yeah. And he's a great leader. He's a senior pastor leading his church and planted a church several years ago. Mm-hmm. And when we catch up, he's always so honoring and kind. He's like, thanks so much for your time. And he just means a lot to me. So we connect a lot. Mm-hmm. But at the end, I'm always like, I don't know how you get it all done, man.
Right.
And
yes.
So I'm at elevation 20,000 or whatever, 25,000.
Yep.
But we are all in this, just trying to figure it out together and feeling that same tension.
No, absolutely. For sure. Now, how have you balanced that out in your own life? How have you, because you're one of those guys that I have the same experience looking at on you. I'm like, man, he's just going everywhere. You know, you guys, you and your lovely wife seem like a power couple. You're like both new authors and you're, you know, family and adoption and new business and new life and all that. So how are you balancing out the demands of ministry and family life and work and all that? What's that look like for you?
Yeah. So, I don't know that we've always done it well. You know, I was in the insurance business for a long time and it was a direct correlation. The more I worked, the more money our family made and more I was able to provide. And so that was a very real tension. It wasn't kind of, sort of, maybe. It was just more work, more money. And so we use kingdom expansion or whatever, but it's like this relentless wheel. And then here we are, we find ourselves in ministry, vocational ministry, and it just keeps going. And our kids right now, we have four kids, as you said, one's adopted. He's 15. He just joined our family last November. That's when we met him. And he's doing cross country. He just left today for Florida for a Disney trip. And then our sixth grader is in football and basketball. Our other high schooler is football, basketball. And our daughter is a competitive dancer.
Oh,
and
goodness.
Frustrating enough, she's actually really, really, really good. And so that alone is a full-time job, right?
Right.
And
right.
So we want to support their dreams and be good parents, and but at the same time, ministry's full on, and work and volunteering, and you know, it's just, it is relentless. And so what I found is that it happened a few years ago, and you know, I know we're going to kind of get there and as we talk about this book, but I found myself at a place. My wife and I were sitting down one evening. She was working on a large group script late at night. The kids had already been put to bed. I was grinding at some stuff. And it was just kind of this wall that we hit of like, you know, Jesus said that we're supposed to have life to the full, but I don't know that this is the full life he intended. Right. But at the same time, all the stuff we were doing was good.
Right.
Like, it wasn't like we're like, you know what, we should get rid of this because that's not important anymore. No, that was people's lives. And so we felt a part of that. And so my wife kind of threw down a challenge, and this is kind of how the book starts, to say, go figure it out, big boy. And so I actually started asking leaders that I admired that were running great families, saying, you know, how do you do this? How do you figure it out? And quickly discovered that balance wasn't part of the solution, that when people were pursuing balance, they were just getting frustrated. But there were ways to kind of get our arms around what we do, specifically in ministry, the unique challenges there. There are ways to better understand and be honest with ourselves and our schedule that can actually set up your family, your friends for success and doing this for the long haul.
Yeah, I love we're kind of pivoting there, but to love the title of your book, The Myth of Balance. One of the things I found a little bit frustrating over the years is I've heard so many leaders get up at conferences and they're leading maybe a significant ministry or a significant business, a significant organization that has had huge impact. And then the conversation goes something like this. They're like, yeah, but don't do it like how I did it. This didn't work out like that all the time. And I'm like, well, if I'm not supposed to do it how you did it, how am I supposed to do it? Because it seems like, and that's why I love about the title of your book and then even where you end up, is that, you know, this idea of being, you know, either being in balance or being well-rounded actually just doesn't work out. Things that are focused and, you know, when you provide energy in a part of your life over an extended period of time, it's actually those areas that get, you know, get progress in them. And so is that kind of where you're driving with the book? You know, give us a bit of sense of why you wrote the book or why you collected these ideas together.
Yeah. So once my wife kind of threw down that challenge, it was time for me to get to work. And as I started to hit a wall, I was like, I felt bad sitting down with the staff. Our staff was growing because at Elevation there toward the end, I was overseeing kids, students, adult small groups, and part of our creative staff. And so there was a lot of staff looking at me and they're all tired and yet loving what we're doing and appreciate it. And I'm sitting there going, do better didn't feel right. And giving them more vision wasn't what they actually needed. Right. We were actually, as an organization, continue to be as a church, very vision focused. Everybody knows where we're going and why we're doing it. They weren't lacking passion. It was just exhausting. And so I felt like I needed to help them get their arms around it for both the future of my family and these families that for whatever reason God entrusted to my care to help help develop and grow as leaders and do their part. And so I started to kind of say, okay, what is our reality and our schedule and our calendar and how this works? Because I like to read productivity books and stuff. And I found that there was a lid on those. And it's why I feel like overall they don't work by themselves for ministry leaders. And it's this. There is the routine of ministry. That is our reality, our schedule, the regular schedule that we do. And that's where productivity tips can help. And you can streamline that and delegate that. And we can understand that. And I think a lot of ministry leaders ignore their reality, the routine. And so what ends up happening is they are getting frustrated because they're working 60 hours a week and yet they're paid for 30. And they're saying, well, I just don't understand. Well, if you look at it, that's not a busy season. You know, we were talking about before we started this that it's getting ready to be a busy season, right? And we're going into Christmas and holidays, and then there'll be Easter. What I've found is that if the season doesn't change, it's not a busy season.
Right.
And so people have a reality that they work really hard, really long hours, and it's relentless. Well, let's get that on the calendar and at least understand where our time's going. But I don't think the routine is the problem. I think most of your leaders that are listening and most of the people I've encountered, the routine, even if it's more than they ever asked for or were ever told, they can manage that. The problem is, and that could be balanced. If routine was the reality, then we can figure out our routine. We can get it balanced because we can control it. But there's another part of our schedule that I call the sporadic. And the sporadic are the things we know they're going to happen. We just don't know when they're going to happen next.
Right.
Wedding, funeral, visit to the hospital. hospital, person that's a volunteer that really needs to spend extra time, that lunch that goes from 30 minutes to 3 hours because they need us and we need them and we're caring for them. Mm-hmm. Those sporadic things, we don't build a plan for those.
No, so true.
And so the book really is, okay, let's understand our routine. Let's call it mm-hmm. what it is. We need mm-hmm. to be more honest with ourselves about what our schedule really looks like. And instead of sometimes we lie to ourselves because it makes it easier for us to tell our families mm-hmm. that we're going to be home at a certain time. But there's no way, even in your routine, that you're going to get home at that time.
Right.
But you're hopeful. You're hopeful. Somehow magically it's going to get done, right? Mm-hmm. But once we get our arms around that, then we have to shift and go, okay, these things that we know they're going to come up, mm-hmm. we need to come up with a plan for them, because the way most ministry leaders treat them and the way we did was that the sporadic were surprises. And so every time they would come up, even though we knew they were going to happen, we just didn't know when next. So we didn't have a plan for them. Mm-hmm. And so one of my favorite examples to give in this, Rich, just mm-hmm. practically speaking, mm-hmm. We kind of had a rhythm in our household. I would be gone no more than 3 nights a week mm-hmm. From our family. And that rhythm worked for us. Some people need to be less or more or whatever. But mm-hmm. for us, that was kind of our rhythm. And mm-hmm. we were all okay with that. But at Elevation, for the longest time, Jessica and I got to do the final interviews in the church. Mm-hmm. And so this meant they've gone through this rigorous process. People want to be on staff at Elevation. Mm-hmm. And we needed one last dinner just to see if they were crazy.
Right.
Right. If they're really but let's just make sure one more time before we offer them a job. Mm-hmm. The thing was, we never scheduled those because most of those people are out of town and they're not going to make it that far. Mm-hmm. I mean, just to be honest, they're just not going to make it through the interview process.
Right.
And so what would end up happening was the night before or that day, it'd be like, hey, we've got somebody in from California. They're really great. Can you take them out tonight? Well, that wasn't part of my 3 nights. That was sporadic, right?
Right.
And so what I would always do, my plan, and horrible plan, it's not even a plan, is I would call home and tell my family, I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry I'm not going to be home tonight, but this is really important, mm-hmm. which I think we can go on a whole nother tangent, Rich. Maybe I can give you a link to this little article I wrote. Mm-hmm. In theory, I believe that we say I'm sorry too much in ministry, not because I'm sorry is a bad phrase, but because it's easier than actually coming up with a plan and doing something to handle it.
So actually processing it. Say,
I apologize it. Yeah. So anyway, so I would call home and I would say, I'm sorry. And my daughter would say with pouty lips, I understand that. And then my wife would actually leave home too and come meet me and we'd go do it together. Mm. So now both of us aren't there and it changes the night.
Right.
And so we know that, we realize that. But we decided, what if we had a plan just for when those interviews came up? And we did something crazy. We call it when this, then that. It's a formula that we develop and reveal throughout the book and explain, because there's traps if you don't do it right. Mm-hmm. But if you do it right, I think it can be a real blessing to the people around you. Mm-hmm. We said, when we have an interview, then the kids go to the same restaurant and they get to order an appetizer and a dessert. Mm-hmm. Now, you know this and I know this. When you have kids, you don't take them for appetizer and dessert. It's like get it out as quickly as possible, right? Exactly. We got to keep moving this thing for sure. And so the whole idea, simply put, is that let's have a plan. And so now I call home and say, hey, we've got an interview tonight. And my kids are like, yes, I'm so glad we get to go do this, because now there's a plan.
Right,
and so now the sporadic has hit, but instead of it feeling bad and another sacrifice for ministry, it feels like we got this.
Right.
And I just think that we treat the sporadic like it's natural disasters, like it's massive, completely unexpected things. And so when we do that, we have to display a certain sense of urgency. And oftentimes that urgency is, well, I've got to go deal with this and everything else suffers. So I'm going to get behind on. And sometimes your family won't suffer in that moment. Mm-hmm. They'll suffer in the days and nights ahead when now everything's behind.
Right. I think this is great. So you've tapped on, I think, one of the core tensions of serving in a ministry context. And, you know, you layer on top of all of that sporadicness that comes, you know, the reality that Sunday's coming and, you know, you can't get up on, if you're a primary communicator, you can't get up on Sunday and say, well, hey, sorry that I didn't really work on my intro this week because, I had this extra thing come up on Tuesday. So I'm just going to jump right into point one. Like, you just can't do that, right? And so we have to, deal with, and I love this, if then, you know, if this, then that, you know, if this, when this happens, then that. I think it's just a fantastic tool, for people to wrestle through. The other thing just to highlight, to underline, you know, something that you said early on was, For years, I felt like I lived in the ministry context, thinking that if we just get through this season, the next season will be better. And I would convince myself, and that could literally be seasons of the year. So, you know, in the fall, I would be like, we just got to push till Christmas, and then we'll hit, you know, January, and then, you know, things will get better. Well, the problem is you hit January and you realize, oh my goodness, January is a huge season. Lots of people are coming.
Right.
And then before you know it, Easter's upon us. And I'd be like, well, let's just get to Easter and then everything will be fine. Well, you know, the end after Easter, you're reloading in the summertime because you've got to like, oh my goodness, we've got to find a whole different group of volunteers. People are going away in the summertime.
Yeah.
And then over years, I realized actually summer is like an incredible season for, you know, kind of reloading, get everything ready for the fall. And so there was no, or so it was either, you know, kind of actual seasons during the year, or it would be seasons of ministry. I would think, man, if we could just, once our church got to 1,000 people, things will just settle out. We'll just hire this person and we'll be able, and things will get better. Well, you know, if you're hiring people that are worth their weight, they're actually generating more growth in the organization, not less. And so, you know, right. I would find myself constantly and now found myself trying to coach new staff to say, listen, it's always going to be busy. Like there is no, you know, there isn't right. a season coming. In fact, we, you know, praise God for that. We want that. We want that kind of, you know, up and to the right. And so the thing I love that you've dealt with here, which I was never really able to articulate well, is this idea of how do you deal with the stuff out of left field. Now, how, you know, dealing with, so that, you know, when this, then that formula, love that. What other rhythms have you been able to add into your leadership, or you've coached staff to be able to add into their leadership to kind of deal with some of the craziness of ministry?
Yeah. One of the things, I guess it kind of falls in a productivity hack. Honestly, I do this. My wife doesn't do it the same way, but because she uses paper still for calendars. Cool, whatever. I use technology. Go figure. I mean, it's a thing for a reason, but
yes,
whatever.
Exactly,
we can pick on her about that. But anyway, all my calendars stay synced up. I never get confused.
Yes.
But on the calendar, I schedule everything. I don't actually have a task list anywhere. Mm-hmm. It doesn't exist in my, I don't have an app for it. Everybody right. asks me what app to use, because what I do is, Rich, when you said, you know, we reached out and connected a while mm-hmm. back and it was like, hey, we're going to do this podcast. Mm-hmm. I put on my calendar, schedule podcast interview.
Right.
And so I put it on there. And so what ends up happening now, that box, maybe I set aside an hour. I don't need that to send an email. And so maybe schedule podcast interview, follow up on this,
right.
Get my credit card processing done, you know, my church card or whatever, and I'd make a list and have a box of time.
Yep.
What it helped me do over time was I now understood better how much time things take because I'd realize, oh, I didn't have enough time. I'm slipping into the next thing. The more important thing that it did was when something came up sporadic, it would show up and kind of derail my calendar. It forced me to move a block somewhere else.
Right, that's good.
So if I wanted to follow up with all my volunteers on a Tuesday, and I decided I hadn't spent enough time with my vision casters, we call them coordinators at Elevation, at highest level volunteering, right? If I wanted to follow up with them on Tuesday and just send them all cards, and then somebody was at the hospital, I needed to go to the hospital. Well, now, instead of that being a good intention, I now look at my calendar and realize I'm either not going to do that or I'm going to move it. And so now you see the fallout of the sporadic. So when something comes up that derails your routine schedule, it forces you to do something with that time instead.
Oh, that's good.
What ends up happening is a lot of your routine gets pushed to Friday and Saturday night.
Yes.
And that's supposed to be time for you to rest, heal, connect with family. And so we joke around about, you know, how many times are children's ministry leaders cutting, pasting, prepping boxes on a Saturday night while they watch TV and are trying to have family time, but they're getting it done.
Yes.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I just want them to know going into the weekend what's happening. Like if they just see it, they can be more honest. And so for me, with my travel's been insane, Rich. I mean, just to be honest.
The Orange Tour is crazy.
So the Orange Tour is 20 cities. And I was last year with Orange Tour, I was in 6 cities.
Yep.
And so this fall, I mean, a year ago, you know, you're booking conferences. So I'm in Brazil, Texas, New York, California. And those aren't Orange Tour. So right. we got 20 cities right. plus all this other stuff sprinkled in. So, I mean, we're yep. running a compassion trip to Guatemala.
Yep.
I mean, all during that time. And so it looks like initially it was like, I don't know if this is possible. Like, I don't right. know how I'm going to get this done. And so what I decided to do was there's a tendency. I'm a real hard worker. I want to keep moving forward. When I'd get back from tour, mm-hmm. from a 2-day being gone 2 days, I'd want to catch up on work. Mm. And so what I did was I went through and I saw that and blocked off family times all throughout. Now, have I got to follow all those? No, is the answer. Things come up.
Right.
But by putting them on there, I have to physically move that and go, this little bit of time I have is now getting moved.
Right.
How am I going to make that up? What am I going to do differently? Mm-hmm. And some people, they're like, oh, that just would make me feel miserable and upset. And I'm like, well, I get that. The flip side would be now you know you've got to address it. You can't ignore it anymore because mm-hmm. it's on your calendar. Mm-hmm. And so just little things like that, whether it be schedule or your rhythm or Christmas services mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever's coming your way, by putting it on the calendar, it forces you to have to move it around.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great, and I, as an aside, as a friend, you know, I obviously, you know, kind of track along with you online. I feel bad for you guys on that Orange Tour thing. I'm like, I know it's great because you get a chance to interact with a lot of leaders, but wow, what a sacrifice. I'm like, it is, I get exhausted just watching, you know, I feel like if I travel 3 or 4 times a month, I'm traveling a lot, let alone, you know, what you guys are up to. So that's incredible. So it's now,
I will say this, Rich, we try to be smart and I've been really encouraged by like Reggie and the team. They've let me take some of my kids with me.
Yeah,
they've went with me on trips. And so we've tried to like find a way to be smart about this and keep our families healthy
yeah.
while we do this. Cause this is actually the hardest run of Orange. It's harder than conference.
Right.
I mean, conference is a lot of work, but you're not gone all the time. Right.
Right,
I mean,
right.
this is the tough one.
Yeah.
This is right up there with like every week student summer camps, like
yes.
just right. Relentless. Just, oh my gosh, this is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Years ago I had hosted a stop. And at that point, Reggie was actually motorcycling from stop to stop, which I don't know if he still does that, but
no, he does.
I was like, it was great. He seemed to enjoy it. Then there was everybody else that was trying to make it happen. But that's great. That's fantastic. Well, the name of your book is, or this particular book is called The Myth of Balance. If people want to pick it up, where can they get it? They can get it on Amazon, I'm assuming, and Orange Books, that sort of thing.
Sure. Just go to mythofbalance.com.
Okay.
They'll be able to get free resources that go along with the book and worksheets, and mm-hmm. they can find out about, we had a really successful workshop that we did, mm-hmm. Facebook Live workshop. Mm-hmm. It's a closed group. We thought we'd have a couple hundred. We ended up having 1,200 people in the group. We're opening up and doing another one of those, and it'll have like worksheets and it'll be live Q&A. So I'll actually mm-hmm. be answering people's questions. Mm-hmm. Like, real honest, and we just found that the questions I answer for one person helps 5 other people.
Yep.
And so it's been really cool, and I kind of love that about the publishing industry where it's at now. There's so much around the freebies and bonuses and all the extra content.
Mm-hmm.
There's pressure to create that content, and mm-hmm. now with technology we're able to do it in a live way where we can actually
totally.
Talk to leaders and connect with them, which has been a blast. And Orange Tour has taken on a whole new level of fun because I've had all these people walk up from the group or people
nice.
That read the book, and it's been a game changer. And so that's been encouraging.
That's cool. And friends that are listening in, you know that I don't have a lot of authors on the podcast on purpose. I could literally every week have people who want to come and hawk books. Frank is a friend, and I really do think that you should pick this up. It might be a cool thing. I was just thinking this. It might be a cool thing for churches to do or church teams to do together in the new year. Pick up some copies, give them to your team for Christmas, and then say, hey, guys, we're going to walk through this in the new year. What a gift to give to your leaders. Hey, I want to help you deal with the stress, and maybe even a bit of water in the midst of a busy season, I know things are really busy. Let's look at if we can maybe spend some time in the new year thinking about how we can, you know, the myth of balance. And it might be an interesting way, for people to invest for their team.
You know, Rich, that's a great idea. And I'm doing this for one church. I don't know why I couldn't do it for more churches. I love this. So if you're doing it as a staff,
yep.
I would love to. It'll be really tricky. I don't even know how we'll do this. We'll figure it out. Maybe during like the last session, if you do it for a few weeks or whatever, mm-hmm. I could Skype in. I won't charge anything or anything. Mm-hmm. I'll Skype in and do like a 30-minute like Q&A with your team.
That's fantastic.
And we could do that. So maybe they could reach out or comment. I don't even know how I have no idea how to start that.
Yeah.
Maybe they comment in the show notes or somehow comment on your blog and, you know, I can watch that and you can forward those to me or whatever. And, you know, churches can start at the beginning of the year and then we'll like have some kind of fun conversation, Skype in for 30 minutes. Great. That could be cool.
That could be really cool. That could be great. And like I say, I think it's a really practical book and really helpful. You know, sometimes I read this stuff and on the productivity side and I would just walk away feeling guilty. I'm like, oh, I should be able to get more done because they're written by like superhuman people. But I love Frank.
Right.
You know, I think he's super practical. It's a great thing. Now, just a kind of totally different, totally side, you know, changing gears altogether. You've just recently launched a podcast, which I love. It's a totally different format. This would pair really well with Unseminary. Short format, kind of quick punches. I'm loving it. It's kind of like this great pick me up at the beginning of the week. Tell us about you know, your new podcast and why did you do that?
Yeah, it's called the Discovering Leadership Podcast. You can get it wherever, you know, you listen to the podcast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my goal is to have them between 5 and 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. I made a challenge that my first several were going to be around 5-7 minutes because that's harder, right? It's easy to ramble.
Yeah.
So I wanted to keep it tight, especially in the beginning. But I've had the privilege of sitting under great leaders and just received great leadership teaching, and it's been consistent over time. And so I've built this reservoir of principles that help govern my day and govern my week. And so I was like, well, somebody else may not have had the opportunity to hear that or in this way. So basically I start each one with this personal story, usually of something I screwed up and did wrong and like, okay, so here's where I messed up. So it has hopefully some entertainment value to it and then go straight into that to one leadership principle. A couple of them may have two or three sub points, but they're real fast, but it's around one topic, one theme. And I just think it's something that hopefully over time, that's the kind of thing where I'm adding just a little bit to everybody's cup. I'm not filling them up. I'm not inundating them with a whole nother book. Just little stuff that helps them think through a leadership mindset on their drive time. And for the most of it, there's not something to make notes off of. It's more to get you thinking better and thinking leadership.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where, you know, we ask similar questions about everybody that's on the podcast. Now, Frank, this is the third time for the lightning round. So I was intrigued. I was like, oh, it'll be interesting to see here, you know, where, you know, what's, you know, what's happening, where you're growing, you know, different areas. So what is an online resource that you're using to help you these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be frustrating because I'm going to answer the same as I always answer. I feel like and probably everybody else answers. Evernote is like my kingpin.
This podcast brought to you by Evernote.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I truly operate every podcast. Yeah. Now what I do is I actually turn on the audio texting feature. I don't know where it types out when you voice text or whatever. I turn that on in Evernote. And when I'm telling the stories for the podcast, I literally just talk into my phone, and that's the first template of the story that I'm going to tell on the podcast. So I just keep putting everything there, and it's just been a great hub for me. A lot of my team is using Asana for task management right now. We've done Slack. We've done a bunch of stuff. So every once in a while, I'll get a task assigned to me, which I just put on my calendar. So I'm really bad about checking those off.
Yes.
But at least get them in my calendar. They get scheduled. But yeah, Evernote's king for me. Everything I do in there, all my writing, everything is in there.
Yeah, it is your second brain, as so many people say. What's a book that you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year that's impacting your thinking or ministry?
Yeah, it's actually a brand new book. I had the privilege of getting it early. So I'm actually on my second time through it. I've just finished it. It's called Finish by John Acuff.
Nice.
It is, so first of all, John so entertaining. So it's a joy to read. He's so funny in the way he jokes on himself and just great storyteller. But this one's another level. I enjoyed Start. Do Over was fine. But Finish it's so practical and insightful around helping us truly achieve our goals. But it's not a productivity book at all. It's about how our mindset, how we think about goals, how sometimes we need to change the way we set the goal. And I literally listened to the book. Then I was reading through it in my Kindle, kind of going back and forth. And then when the hard copies came out, I took a highlighter to it.
Oh, wow.
Devoured it. To go back through it, I've literally devoured this book. And it it is a gift. Like I think, in fact, I would say go get it before you go get the Myth of Balance. Like it's so helpful.
That's saying a lot from an author. What's a a ministry that you are looking at that's inspiring you these days?
Yeah. So as I wrote my notes, as you said, compassion.
As I stumbled over it.
I had the privilege to go see, I'm going on a compassion trip with them here in a few months with some other pastors, mm-hmm. but actually went to their corporate headquarters in Colorado not long ago mm-hmm. and was blown away by their methodology and stewardship and how they're embracing technology. Mm-hmm. They have a machine. I don't even understand this, Rich. Mm-hmm. They have a machine that when, for people that still mail in their sponsorship check, the machine opens the envelope. Peels the envelope away, scans the check and the child, sorts it, puts it on the account, and deposits it on the bank, and it can process 1,000 an hour.
That's amazing.
That literally a person never touched it. And so they've created all these efficiencies. They actually used to be the largest use of postage in the state of Colorado, right behind.
Oh, wow.
Right, as them and Progressive Insurance, I would go back and forth.
Yeah.
And they've actually plummeted. Hmm. They're way less now because they've moved so well into the digital age and the way they're doing that and with the app and stuff. I just love their mindset and approach. Like I feel good about giving to them, and their vision for what's ahead is really impressive.
Yeah, they're amazing. Compassion is an incredible organization. They obviously, the work they do on the field, they have had an opportunity to travel and experience their work on the field. It's one of those strange experiences in life. I went in with high expectations. I was like, I know this is going to impress me. And then I was blown away. I was like, oh my goodness, it was even more, which is hard to do. But they, you know, but then you say on the organization side, they're world class for sure. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would that be and why?
You know, I think it's Eugene Peterson. I'm sure he's been said before. I know he has. Especially now that he's not doing live interviews anymore. I just feel like he is insightful and so sharp, and he's influenced me so much. You know, I got the message when it first came out, and I was a young believer at that point. And it was just the New Testament. And he just, I've also watched him doctrinally, theologically grow, mature, process, feel comfortable in his own skin to change and learn. And I just admire that. I admire somebody that's like trying to figure out, you know, how to reconcile his faith with things today and watch him be willing to say, you know, I think I look at that differently now, which is just fascinating to me.
Very cool. Well, I know you've got a lot going on. You're a lot trying to balance in your life. You know, when you want to pull back and just relax, enjoy life a little bit, what does, you know, Frank Beeler do to just enjoy life a little better?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying mountain biking right now. I always love exercising, but I got a new mountain bike. I went like saved up my pennies and got a really good one. Off.
Although he's a street bike guy, so
he's a street biker, which I like to say it that way specifically because when I say street biker, I picture him in leather and like maybe some leather chaps, which is just amazing to think about when you think about
Karen. Yeah, that would be amazing.
picture me more the outdoorsy, but no, I love kind of zipping down the trails, and I probably go a little too often by myself. It's probably not the safest thing to do, but I really do enjoy it. I put my AirPods in and just take off down the trails.
Nice. Well, Frank, I really appreciate you being on the show today. Thank you. Always good to connect with you. You're a fantastic leader. If people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that at Rethink or in touch with everything that's happening at Orange these days?
Yeah. So frankbeeler.com exists, which is basically a landing page that kind of gets you to the podcast or the book or, you know, whatever resources. And then I really love social media and I'd love to connect with people on there. So it's at F Beeler, B-E-A-L-E-R. So at F Beeler, find me wherever. Reach out. Let's share ideas. Let's learn from one another.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.